In Monday's National Post, March 27th, Tom Axworthy wrote a column saying that the federal Liberals have made great promises, not bad ideas, but the problem has been implementation. They have not. They have, beyond announcing many programs, they have not implemented them. And in fact, the daycare program was called a deathbed repentance.
Right.
It seems that the provincial Liberals are stuck with the same problem.
What I'm saying about the provincial budget is really two things. One is that it's pretty shocking that 3 years after they were elected, we're still operating with exactly the same policy framework in a whole bunch of key policy areas that affect low-income Ontarians and poverty and those issues.
Yes.
And secondly, that there's a sort of an air of unreality around the government's line on its budget priorities, because the Guinea government's not saying that, you know, we don't want to do anything about the downloan of the municipalities. What they're doing is they're saying, well, we can't do anything about it because the federal government hasn't given us any money. There does seem to be a little bit more happening in the infrastructure area than there has been.
They're cleaning up our infrastructure, but they're not doing the rest. We've hired a principal and we've gotten a janitor.
Well, something like that, yeah. Yeah, that would be a good way of putting it.
Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability.
Disrespect welcomes Hugh McKenzie from the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives to the show to discuss the McGuinty budget in 2006. Hugh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
You have some issues with the current budget. What are the issues that you see as the creator of an alternative budget?
The reaction that just jumps out at you when you look at the budget is what the government has done, or more correctly, has not done to deal with the issues of poverty and income inequality and access to housing and child care, all those things that were cut to ribbons under the Harris government and that the McGuinty government was ostensibly elected to correct. If you look at the budget as it was announced, and there's absolutely nothing in housing. The 2% that they put into the budget for increases to social assistance recipients, that's Ontario Works and Ontario Disability Support Plan recipients, is in some respects it's worse than nothing, because it's acknowledging that there's a problem, but at the same time it's not doing anything about it at all.
No, well, that money was gone and more last year.
Exactly. I mean, we're talking about a 2% increase after 2 years with nothing, coming in a year in which inflation rate was over 2.5%.
Right.
I really consider it to be a moral failure of the government. Having sat in opposition and watched and complained about the vicious policies of the Harris government, for them to govern the province for 3 years, and even when the increase takes effect in September that they've announced.
In September?
That's when it's going to take effect. It will take effect in September, and even with that 2% increase, people who depend on Ontario Works and Ontario Disability Support, or their subsistence, will find themselves in a worse position in real terms than they were when the McGuinty government was elected.
They're already there, aren't they?
They are already there, but even if you give them the credit for the 2% in September, they will still be behind where they were when McGuinty was elected, and I think that's just shameful.
They're saying to the public, look, we're giving these people an increase, and they're saying to the people who are receiving the benefits probably something you couldn't say on the air.
Exactly. And then at the same time as they announced this 2% increase, they give themselves tremendous credit for having decided not to claw back the increases that have taken place in the child tax benefit, which is a federal program,
right,
since they were elected. And in their budget documents, they talk about a single parent with two children something like $550 as a result of the government deciding not to take away the $550 that the National Child Benefit Supplement went up.
Right.
It conveniently ignores the fact that while they've passed through about $550, there's over $2,700 for that same parent that was being clawed back when they were elected that they haven't touched. They've done nothing to address the issues that were created by the Harris government when social assistance benefits were cut. If the government had simply lived up to its commitment to end the clawback, the example family that they used in the budget would have $2,700 more today than they have now. Their failure to deal with that issue cost that the family that they talk about $2,700 a year. And the total cost of eliminating the clawback is in the neighborhood of $250 million.
They gave $400 million to Casino Windsor.
Well, they're giving $400 million to Casino Windsor. They had a $3 billion windfall last year.
Yeah.
You'd think that out of a $3 billion windfall, they would have found $250 million to get rid of this clawback from the lowest income families with children in the province.
Of the demographic groups, it is these families with children who are the farthest below the poverty line and most desperately need the help. And unfortunately, it is the children who pay.
Well, yeah, and dealing with poverty and income inequality is a moral imperative. But poor families, kids from poor families are less likely to participate in post-secondary education.
Right.
Children in poor families are likely to be less healthy. They consume more healthcare resources. And the list just goes on and on of areas in which being as, frankly, vicious in the way that poor families with children are dealt with in our system actually comes back to haunt the society as a whole. I was really struck that during that horrible period around Christmas with the street violence in Toronto, people were describing the kids who were involved in this as Mike Harris's children.
Yes.
Which I think really puts it in very stark terms what the relationship is between a society tolerating deep, deep poverty and the social consequences of that.
Yeah.
So that's one of my main reactions to the budget. The other is the McGuinty government actually doesn't say it doesn't want to do these things.
No.
What it keeps saying is that it doesn't have the money. And the premier's latest line is that, you know, if the fiscal imbalance between Ontario and the federal government were addressed, then we'd have the money. To my way of thinking, that is just ignoring the 400-pound gorilla that's sitting in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
The 400-pound gorilla that's sitting in Ontario's fiscal corner is more than $15 billion cumulative in today's dollars in tax cuts that Mike Harris brought in that, frankly, Ontario couldn't afford. For the McGuinty government to be blaming the federal government for its what it claims is its fiscal incapacity to deal with these issues, I think is just a cop-out.
Even with the tax cuts, there were over $2 billion in windfall tax gains for the Ontario government.
Yes, in fact, the windfall turns out to be more like $3 billion. Even more than that, if you were to take into account the reserves that they built into the budget last year that they didn't have to use.
I see.
So there was a huge amount of extra money floating around at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And it's just shameful not to recognize some of those basic things. Another point I'd make, in child care, the government has been working away at a child care initiative. It started working on this child care initiative long before anybody had any idea that there was going to be any federal money. Suddenly we get some federal money, then the federal money gets taken away, and suddenly Ontario is abandoning its child care initiative. I mean, again, I think that's just an excuse for doing nothing.
So this government, from your point of view, is at least triply dishonest. Number one, they made a number of promises, like the National Child Benefit clawback. They were going to end it, and they didn't keep their promises. We keep hearing about them as promise breakers. But number two, they keep making offers to do things like it's our agenda to protect the most disadvantaged in the province, and they give them a 2% increase over 4 years, which fools some people into thinking something's being done when in fact they're worse off than they ever were. And now we find out that they're crying with a $3 billion windfall, over $3 billion windfall, to credit your comment, that they're crying poor and they're saying, well, gee, you know, without that federal money, our hands are tied. And in fact, they're holding the poor hostage.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, one can't have a conversation about this without giving the government some credit for some of the things that it has done.
There's
no question that they've put a huge amount of additional money into health. A lot of that has been federal government transfers, but they put a lot of money into the healthcare system. There's no question that they've put a lot of money in, badly needed money, into the elementary and secondary education system. There's still some real problems with the way the funding works there, but they put more money in. In post-secondary education, did put some initial money in, all at the same time, students find themselves in a position where, as of next September, they would have been better off with the Harris government's policy of keeping the tuition increasing at the rate of inflation than with the freeze that Dalton McGuinty campaigned on.
The students are not better off because McGuinty has lifted the freeze.
Well, he's lifted the freeze, and the first increase in tuition that he's authorized is greater than the value of the freeze. To me, there's some real acid test questions that this government's failing to answer.
In Monday's National Post, March 27th, Tom Axworthy wrote a column saying that the federal Liberals have made great promises, not bad ideas, but the problem has been implementation. Beyond announcing many programs, they have not implemented them. And in fact, the daycare program was called a deathbed repentance.
Right.
It seems that the provincial Liberals are stuck with the same problem. They keep announcing these intentions, and they seem not to be able to implement them. Even the money they've put into health care has been saddled with things like LHINs on the horizon, where communities will have no say in how they allocate the health care dollars that they get, and situations where hospitals will be told, yeah, you gave you more money, but we're not going to tell you how you have to balance your budget. And the hospital goes, geez, we make a lot more money on acute care. Let's dump the rehab and outpatient programs. And the Liberal government says and does nothing, says, well, we gave them the choice. That's the choice they made. That's fine. And in the meantime, the costs just keep going up. I mean, in effect, negating the increases that the Liberal government has found.
Yeah,
they seem not to know where they're headed.
They talked a really good game about taking on the hospitals, and then they backed off.
Yeah.
And they talked a really good game about taking on the doctors and forcing through primary care reform, and they backed off. And the result is that, in large part, they're doing exactly what they said they wouldn't do, which was pour a whole lot more money into the existing system.
Right.
With respect to rebuilding public infrastructure, the government is showing signs of getting a bit better. There does seem to be a little bit more happening in the infrastructure area than there has been.
Yeah.
But beyond that...
So essentially there are janitors at this point then.
Pardon me?
There are janitors. They're cleaning up our infrastructure, but they're not doing the rest. We've hired a principal and we've gotten a janitor.
Well, something like that, yeah. Yeah, that would be a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, you're coming up with an alternative to that. When do you expect your alternative budget to be out?
Sometime in the next 3 weeks. We haven't nailed down the date exactly because we're kind of waiting for the federal government to indicate when its budget's coming down so that we don't end up crying in the wilderness while everybody's talking about something else.
What site should people go to
well,
view that?
Well, all of the Ontario alternative budget information, including the technical papers that we regularly do, are available at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives website at www.policyalternatives, that's all one word, .ca.
www.policyalternatives.ca.
That's right.
Well, I thank you, Hugh, for your perspective and your time today. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks.
Thanks, Hugh.
I guess I should welcome you, John Clark, to Disrespect.
Thank you very much.
To talk about the McGuinty budget. What's your perspective on what's happened with the budget and where we have to go with this?
They certainly, when campaigning for office, created the impression that they were going to be working to reverse what was done during the Tory years. They've held the line. They've given increases in total that don't even match the rate of inflation. So the truth is that people will continue to get poorer under Dalton McGuinty than they were in the days of Mike Harris, and that's really quite a serious development, particularly serious in light of the gutting of the special diet program.
No word about the special diet. They're just butting ahead with that, going to cut everybody's income by a fifth or more.
That's correct. That's certainly the direction they're going in, and obviously that's going to change only to the extent that there's a really powerful challenge against the government. You know, it was during the days of David Peterson in the 1980s, a liberal regime, that the last increases, positive increases in welfare rates were achieved. And so, you know, the liberal government of the day, I think, has to be challenged with something even more powerful than Peterson confronted.
Now, the liberals promised before they were elected to end the national child benefit clawback, and now they're saying we can't do what we promised, but trust us, we'll do it after the next election.
Yeah, they promised certainly to end the clawback, and as a matter of fact, they promised as well, and this hasn't been paid much attention to. They promised that they would, as a base, index welfare rates and ODSP rates to the cost of living, and so they've reneged on that promise as well.
Well, they've given people on fixed incomes a 2% increase. Is that the rate of inflation, or is it below?
I believe that it falls slightly below the rate of inflation by itself. But of course, remember that there was no increase last year, and so.
We should be looking for double the rate of inflation.
Yeah.
I cribbed some notes from the Star, and apparently, some that did get a benefit from the Ontario budget were the gasoline tax, the tobacco tax are both down, and a lot of other taxes are up. Income tax, corporation tax, employer health tax. I could go on and on and on. Now, PST, it seems as if the Liberals have given a break to gas guzzlers and smokers and nevertheless raked in a lot of extra money. Why do you figure they don't want to give money to the most disadvantaged, their voters?
Yeah, I mean, you can't find an explanation for what has been maintained in terms of their ability to meet the needs. They were obviously awash in money this time. They had revenue they hadn't even considered possible to deal with. And certainly, in any event, it's perfectly easy from a medical point of view to make clear that if you keep people living in poverty, the costs attached to ill health and early death and generally wasted human potential is going to far exceed the cost of actually providing people with an income they can survive on.
Right.
So there obviously has to be an alternative explanation, and certainly we believe that it lies in the fact that poverty, as much as it may be measured in terms of human misery for the people directly affected, at the other end of the scale actually creates wealth for other people. They want rates to be as low as possible because they want people to be as desperate as possible and ready to work for
as little as possible.
The lowest wages and the worst possible working conditions. And if people are able to pay the rent and feed their children with some degree of adequacy, they're obviously not going to be working for sub-minimum wage jobs and dealing with abusive employers. But if they're absolutely desperate, they'll take anything, and that's the name of the game, I think.
So this is essentially, then, in your view, is a budget in support of sub-minimum wage jobs and abusive employers.
I think that's entirely true. I think Carol Gore in the Toronto Star some time ago made the observation that the amount of money it would have taken them in a year to index welfare to the rate of inflation, as they promised to do, would actually have been less than the amount of money they gave away directly to Casino Windsor.
Yeah, $400 million, wasn't it? $400 million, wasn't it?
Yes, and so I mean, obviously, there's no possible legitimate fiscal argument for keeping people in poverty, and the fact that there are costs attached to it, just sheer physical costs that are let alone the questions of morality and ethics, there are obvious costs attached to keeping people poor that outweigh anything they save. There can be no explanation found in the fact that they don't have the money, they don't have the resources to do this. There must be another agenda at work, and I think it is the cheap labor agenda that we're dealing with.
You mentioned that there could be a medical case made for maintaining and improving the level of income for disadvantaged people. Is there any progress made by the doctors who appealed this to the Privacy Commissioner?
Well, the unfortunate truth is that we may indeed see a report come down from the Privacy Commission, and that would be good. It would be very positive. But that if the government gives themselves through an ordering council the power to violate somebody's privacy in the form of their medical records and whatnot, there's no immediate challenge to that possible through the Privacy Commissioner. That's not to say that a report that's negative from the Privacy Commissioner isn't useful, but it's not going to be a legally binding thing.
Yeah. One agency that has a little bit more power but seems to exercise it great length is the Human Rights Commission. I heard some rumors about changes to the Human Rights Act this fall. I'm not very hopeful. Have you heard anything about that?
Probably no more than you've heard. I know it's. I know there's some rumors. There's something in the works, but what it's going to involve, I would have to say that, you know, I certainly people use any handhold they can, and we're not opposed in principle to going to the Human Rights Commission. But I think it would be a bit of a vain hope to think that there's going to be some momentous set of changes that are going to enable people to win justice and human rights through the Human Rights Commission.
Yeah, my opinion exactly. I read in one of the papers that the OW workers are handing out food bank locations with the checks in Toronto.
I don't know if that's a routine thing, but it certainly does. It certainly does happen, and it's certainly the problem. I think is that when organisations scramble to provide charity, and I'm not looking to denounce people, but unfortunately, the system of state provision begins to regard that private charity network as a de facto part of the status quo.
Yeah,
and feels that, you know, don't worry,
if your check
is adequate, we can send you to the food bank, we can, and that's just not a solution. They're not coming out and saying it, but by implication, what they're telling people is that, look, what we're giving you isn't enough to survive on, therefore you're going to have to go and seek private charity.
The most surprising thing about this has always been for me that the people who are hardest hit appear to be single mothers and their children.
Mm-hmm. But there's no question that you know, the government has all the studies, everything at its disposal to make them fully aware of what's going on, of the enormity of what's going on. But I mean, it has people. I mean, for goodness' sake, one of the ministers in this government is Gerard Kennedy, who for years was the voice and the director of the Daily Bread Food Bank. I mean, there's no possibility of arguing that this man doesn't understand what a 2% increase means in terms of its gross inadequacy, and it means in terms of suffering and misery and children's health and all these things. He's fully aware of it. Sandra Pupatello, the minister, when she was in opposition, she was the sort of the self-appointed voice of conscience when it came to the Harris government's record on welfare. She knows the stuff inside out. She could recite it chapter and verse, and if she doesn't know, she could go over to the Ministry of Health just across the street from where she operates and pick up more studies than she could carry, showing her conclusively what's going on and what poverty is and what it represents and why it's ruining people's lives and killing people and all these things. They're aware, they understand, they know, but in the end, I think we have to get away from this naive notion that governments
don't
actually represent the interests of most people. They don't. They represent the interests of only the wealthiest people.
Look at their ridings. I mean, is Kennedy's riding still Parkdale High Park, or has
That's
it
right,
changed?
Yes.
It is. Well, it's one of the poorest ridings in the west end of Toronto. Pupatello represents an area of Windsor, and Windsor is by no means an affluent city. So these people, their constituents, are going to rise up in fury over these measures. And they're expecting to be re-elected nonetheless.
Yes, that would appear to be the case.
All right. So where do we go from here? How do we solve these problems?
We have to actually tell people who are being cut off the special diet, who can't survive, who are facing eviction, that they need to be joining us in challenging and fighting this government. On April the 8th, OCAP will be organising a march into the very, very wealthy Toronto neighbourhood of Rosedale. And it's an area of the city that is in its own right an incredibly wealthy enclave, but it's a symbol for the wealthiest that live in this society, and they are the people who benefit from the low welfare rates as employers and as recipients of the tax breaks that Harris took from poor people in the form of welfare cuts and gave to the rich in the form of tax breaks. And so we're going there essentially to demand their money back and to hold those that this government does really speak for accountable, and that's going to be a step in the campaign to win decent income. Because historically, when the poor suffer in silence, they get nothing. When the poor resist, that's when governments have to meet their needs.
Well, that's a Saturday, isn't it? And what
At what time on that Saturday will you be meeting and where?
We're going to meet on Yonge Street, right opposite Rosedale Station, north of Bloor.
In the park?
In the park at 6:30 in the evening, and then we'll be going into Rosedale.
Well, I trust that anybody listening will consider attending on that day.
That would be truly great.
All right. I thank you for your time, and I thank you for your perspective on this. There's no other word for it. This intractable disgrace.
Absolutely.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much, John.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Disrespect is on radioforall.net and is digitally recorded from live studio and telephone interviews. You've been listening to Scott Cushney from Two Pianos, No Waiting, and The Gemini Rag.